This segment is about the infrastructure layer of the internet and who controls it, because several stories today converge on that theme in ways that feel deliberate, even though they arrived independently. Let's start with .self, the new top-level domain designed for self-hosting. 540 points, 313 comments on HN. The Human-Centered Computing Foundation is proposing a TLD specifically intended for people running services from their own hardware, where the registrar structure and DNS policies are designed to protect individual operators rather than commercial interests.
The technical and philosophical argument here is interesting. The existing TLD ecosystem is designed for commercial registrants. Even .org, which was supposed to be for nonprofits, is now controlled by a private equity-backed registry. The .self proposal is trying to create namespace infrastructure with governance structures that match its intended use. Small operators, hobbyists, people running Nextcloud on a Raspberry Pi in their closet. The HN thread gets deep into ICANN politics, which is genuinely complicated.
And this story rhymes directly with the European Digital ID Wallet piece, which has 29 comments and is framed by the WAG Institute as a gift to Google and Apple. The argument is that the EU's eIDAS 2.0 regulation, which mandates digital identity wallets for EU citizens, effectively requires these wallets to live on smartphones, which means they'll live in Apple's App Store ecosystem or Google's Play Store ecosystem. The regulation was designed to create European digital sovereignty, but the implementation pathway runs through American tech companies' distribution monopolies.
This is a real tension in European digital policy. The GDPR was genuine regulatory innovation that created global standards. But eIDAS 2.0 illustrates a recurring problem. You can legislate the goal without controlling the infrastructure needed to achieve it. If the identity wallet must be a mobile app, and mobile app distribution is controlled by two American companies who take 15 to 30% cuts and can delist apps at will, then European digital identity infrastructure has a dependency on foreign corporate goodwill built into its foundation.
From a market power analysis perspective, this is exactly the kind of leverage point that antitrust law theoretically exists to address. Which is actually a good moment to explain something about how antitrust law works in practice, because people use the word monopoly very loosely, and the legal definition is much more specific. The Sherman Antitrust Act of 1890 prohibits two main things: agreements between competitors that restrain trade, and monopolization, which means using monopoly power to exclude competition. But here's the part people miss. Simply having a large market share is not illegal. Microsoft in the 1990s had over 90% of the PC operating system market, and the DOJ's case against them wasn't about the market share itself. It was about specific conduct: the contracts that prevented PC makers from shipping competing browsers, the technical restrictions designed to harm Netscape. What the law actually asks is whether a company acquired or maintained monopoly power through exclusionary conduct rather than superior products or legitimate competition. So when people say Apple's App Store is a monopoly and should be broken up, the legal question isn't, does Apple have a dominant position? It obviously does in the iOS app market. The question is, did Apple achieve or maintain that dominance through conduct that excluded competitors in ways that went beyond simply competing well? That's a much harder case to make, and it explains why antitrust litigation in tech moves so slowly, even when the market concentration seems obvious to observers.
That context is directly relevant to the eIDAS situation, because European competition regulators are actually further along in applying this logic. The Digital Markets Act designates certain companies as gatekeepers and imposes obligations on them that go beyond traditional antitrust. It's essentially legislating behavioral remedies in advance, rather than waiting for harm to materialize and then litigating. The .self TLD and the resistance to eIDAS's implementation pathway are both expressions of the same anxiety, that the open internet is gradually being replaced by a managed internet controlled by a small number of platform operators.
The native graphical shell for SSH story connects here as well, 323 points, 186 comments. This is a project from someone named Marcus, no relation, who built a tool that adds a graphical layer to SSH sessions, enabling things like drag-and-drop file transfer, inline image rendering, and persistent terminal state across reconnections. It sounds incremental, but the HN discussion is passionate because SSH is foundational infrastructure for everyone who self-hosts. Anything that reduces the friction of managing remote servers lowers the barrier to running your own infrastructure rather than delegating it to AWS or Azure.
The comments are split between people who are excited about the user experience improvements and people who are deeply skeptical about adding complexity to a security-critical protocol. That's a healthy tension. SSH's security properties come partly from its simplicity, a minimal attack surface. Any graphical layer introduces new code, new parsing logic, new potential vulnerabilities. The project's author is apparently thinking carefully about this, but the skeptics aren't wrong to ask the questions loudly.